Well, I'm really glad you're joining us for part three of a series that we are calling Stress Less. And I think stress is one of those universal conditions. So if you're joining us at one of our locations today, if you're watching live online or on demand or via podcast, glad you're here. You can catch up on where we've come, but the idea is to stress less. And so part one and part two are already online. You can get them at Connexus Church or on iTunes via podcast, and we'd love for you to catch up. But today, we're going to talk about something that kind of is a universal issue, and that is our family, all right? So whether you have a family of your own or whether you're single, just think back to when you were a kid and, you know, you were at home with your parents. But can we all agree on this one thing, that family can be stressful? I mean, family can be very stressful. I think it's part of God's sense of humor that he takes more than one human being and makes them live in a fixed square footage forever, you know. And just let's see the fireworks that happen, because they always happen. So I've been married for 27 years. My wife, Toni, and I, she's here today. We have two grown sons and an amazing daughter-in-law. And so, yeah, I get stress. I get that. And I understand what it's like to actually be in a family and try to raise a family and sometimes do a good job and sometimes not a good job. So this past week, we are all out for dinner in Toronto because my kids are grown. One's graduated from university. The other one's finishing up university in a year or so. And so we met in Toronto for a family dinner. And I said, hey, you know, I'm preaching on stress this weekend and on family stress. Can you think of a time where, you know, your dad was stressed? And, you know, it took them hours to work through that and try to think of a moment. No, it basically took about half a second. And what's fascinating is they all landed on exactly the same issue. Because I said, I'm thinking of telling a vacation story, and they're like, oh, yeah. They all went back to this, like, immediate nightmare that they could all think of. So a number of years ago, about 5 or 6 years ago, we did a big family vacation, and some of you have done those, where my parents, they're originally from Europe, they immigrated here to Canada, and they said, we want to take the whole family to Europe. So we went for a couple of weeks, and all of us, you know, I have three siblings, and so my sisters and I, we all flew in separately, and my family, my wife, Toni, and our kids and daughter-in-law, we landed in Paris, and then we're going to drive up to Belgium and then eventually to Holland, and so this is like our first big European vacation, like a big deal. We'd always done vacations as a family, but this was pretty exciting, and they all immediately went back to that day we landed in Paris, and we went to the rental car station, where apparently, you know, their dad got a little bit stressed out, so they say. And I remember that time because, you know, when you have this view of like, well, what would my European vacation be like? You know, for me, for cars, it always involved BMWs or, you know, Audis or that kind of thing. And of course, that never really happens. We rented a minivan because that's what you do. We had five people and we all had luggage. So I get into this minivan, which was much smaller than North American minivans. And I'm sitting there and you're tired, right? I'm justifying my behavior a little bit. Because, you know, we'd worked hard getting ready for the vacation. You know that deal. You have to work twice as hard to take a week off. And so I had been working twice as hard trying to get everything caught up here so I could be off for a couple weeks. And then it's an evening flight and you fly overnight, so you're not particularly rested. And so I get into this minivan and I can't figure out how to turn it on. Like, not at all. I'm like, Europeans design their cars very, very differently. And so there was much discussion about how to turn it on, and everybody had an opinion, and you know as a dad how open you are to everyone else's opinion and how much smarter they are than you are. So I was not handling that particularly well. Well, we finally collectively figured out how to turn it on. Then I couldn't figure out how to get it in gear. And so my anxiety is rising and rising, and my stress is rising. And then we finally figure out how to get it in gear. And, like, if you've ever been to Europe, everything is smaller. Like, parking garages are smaller, and lanes are smaller, and parking spots are smaller. So I'm in this van, which is a very big vehicle, even though it's smaller than ours, compared to all the other ones. And I'm trying to figure out how to get out of this parking lot, and like everything is too small and the angles don't work, and I'm like ready to get back on the plane and go back to North America that moment. So I'm melting down. My daughter-in-law says at dinner, she says, you know, we were only pretending after a while to be asleep in the back seat just so that we could avoid all of the drama going on in the front seat. I'm like, that's good to know. And then Sam, my youngest, says, you know, I just learned growing up that that was going to be day one of any vacation we went on anywhere. You were going to melt down, and day two, it would be fine. So it's like, feels like The Real Preacher is a Barry and Aurelia TV show or something like that. But anyway, you can relate to that, right? Like, even why is something that is supposed to be enjoyable, like vacation, stressful when it involves family? But often it is. And what we're encouraging you to do in this is to figure that out. We said, you know, that your stress is attached to something. And often, you know, if it's a fear or a direct trigger, you're like, oh yeah, I got that big report, or we're not packed for vacation, or we're going on vacation, but we don't quite have the money for vacation. And you can figure out what it is. But for a lot of us, when stress and anxiety are a regular part of everyday life, we don't know what it's attached to. And that's why we're anxious about it. It's just like, well, I'm always anxious, or I'm always stressed, or I'm always worried, or I'm always fearful. And so what we've been encouraging you to do is to just figure that out and to figure out what is at the end of your rope. And what we discover, what should be at the end of your rope, and this is where we're going to wrap up in this series, God should be at the end of your rope. So when I'm frustrated over a rental vehicle, when I'm frustrated with my family, when I'm frustrated over whatever, and I'm like looking at that, I find God. But instead, here's what we discover. We find that we're really anxious about ourselves and what other people think of us, or our family, and if anything ever happened to my family, or anything happened to my kids, or anything happened to this, like, we just worry, and that's where we find our idols, or, you know, money. Money's always a stressor. Well, why is money a stressor? And some of you, you're stressed because you don't have it, and that kind of makes sense. Some of you are stressed about money, and you do have it, and you can't figure that out. And why is money always a stressor? So in the first week, we gave you a rope, and we want you to trace down. And even you can pray about this. People have been emailing me and texting me and let me know. We're carrying this around with us. And any time I find I'm stressed or anxious about something, I pull this out. And then I try to figure out what's at the bottom of it. So family can be incredibly stressful. And that's what I want to talk about today. How many of you, just quick show of hands, have children at home right now or are expecting? Just hands up. Yeah, vast majority of you. Some of you are like me, you're empty nesters. If you are wondering what that's like, it is amazing. Okay, it's incredible. It's like hashtag date night every night. It is so good. It is so great. But you got to wait a long time to get there. So sucks to be you. Anyway, family can be stressful. Family can be stressful. So what I want to do, we've got a very special guest today, pediatrician Dr. Rob Meter, who's going to join us in a little bit. But I want to look at some of Jesus' teachings, because I look back and, you know, now we can have a dinner like that and laugh about it. And we laugh so hard about that vacation. But in the moment, it's never funny, right? In the moment, it's never great. And I get stressed and you get stressed. And sometimes that stress can do damage. If you've got kids at home, you've got this very short window, and it's shorter than you think. And you've got an opportunity to raise these kids. And Jesus actually talks about children. In first century culture, children were not very valued. They were seen as property. They were actually, sadly, seen as disposable. You still see that in parts of the world where people don't care about their kids. Well, in the first century, children were seen as just property, chattels, disposable. If you didn't want one, leave them out on the street to die in some aspects of culture. And we don't think that way because Jesus didn't think that way. He believed that life had dignity. And Christianity is one of those things that, believe it or not, contrary to common opinions today, elevated the role of women, elevated the role of children to the point where we said we see the image of God in everyone. Regardless of your background or your social status or your skin color or your gender or your age. And so Jesus has asked this question, and anybody who's ever had a little bit of ambition in them at school or at home or sibling rivalry or anything can relate to the question that he gets asked. It's in Matthew 18, verses 1 through 6. So his disciples, his closest followers, are with Jesus. And about that time, look at what it says. The disciples came to Jesus and asked, "Who is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven?" Some of you, you're trying to do that at work right now. Like, who's up for the next promotion? Or when am I going to get a raise? Or who's the best employee? Or maybe you're in school. Who's the best student? You know, I want to be top of my class or top 10% or top 5%. And it's a very natural human question. And Jesus turns the question on its head because he's like, okay, that's the way you guys work. That is not the way God works. Like, there's a greatness, but Jesus, if we had time and we're in a different series, we'd handle this differently. Jesus actually redefines greatness. And he says, what you think greatness is not necessarily greatness. And so he completely redefines it. And he does it by doing something totally unexpected and something that pretty much nobody else in the culture would have done at the time because children weren't seen as having much value. And look at how Jesus answers this question, which has the wrong motivation because they're all like pining for first. And look at this. Jesus then called a little child, probably a toddler, to him because that child could walk and put the child among them. And that would have been shocking. Because it's like, whoa, kids are supposed to shut up and be in the back. And Jesus is like, bring him here. And then he gives everybody, all the adults, a lesson. And he said, I tell you the truth, unless you turn from your sins, adults, and become like little children, see, I'm going to use this as an example of what you should be like, you will never get into the kingdom of heaven. Now, commentators of the Bible have debated for centuries what this means, and there's multiple meanings, and what was he getting at? I'm going to give you my take. There's a lot of things going on here, but one of the things that was going on was Jesus was saying, look at the quality of a child. Look at, some of you had tough children, childhood, and maybe your parents were not trustworthy, but if you've got a toddler, let's not pretend terrible twos, let's go younger than that, okay? Let's go to age one or an infant, to beyond 3 months when they stop crying, okay? So in that window, you see a child who is learning so much every day and who is wide-eyed. And so trusting, and necessarily trusting. A child does not have the ability to provide for their own needs. We had an amazing preschool program at our campuses called Wombaland, We have lots of kids there every week. We have to take really good care of them, and we value children because Jesus valued children. We value people because Jesus valued people. But imagine releasing a preschool into the wilderness. It's just like, fend for yourself. Some days you feel like that as parents, but you can't do that, all right? You would never do that. Kids wouldn't survive. They're completely dependent on you as parents, us as caregivers, to provide for their needs. They don't know how to find food. They don't know how to do that. And Jesus, here's what Jesus is saying. Don't miss the point. You need that level of trust and dependence as an adult in your relationship with God. And so he holds up kids as an example of how we should trust God. But you know what I remember out of that as well is that your kids, particularly when they're young, but right into their teen years, they're looking to you. They're looking to you. And they're like, show me, teach me. And Jesus here is using it as an example of saying, and that's what you should be like, Carrie. That's what you should be like, adults. You should have that level of trust in your heavenly Father. But he's accentuating how much our kids depend on us. And then he says, so anyone who becomes as humble as this little child is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven. So he values humility. And anyone who welcomes a little child like this on my behalf is welcoming me. Look at how much he values kids, and this is what he says, and this is a warning to all of us who care for kids, all of us who are parents, to all of us who interact with children. But if you cause one of these little ones who trust in me to fall into sin, in other words, never betray the trust of a child. Be so careful with how you handle them when they're in your care. He says, if you ruin them, it would be better for you to have a large millstone tied around your neck and be drowned in the depths of the sea. You know what Jesus is doing, among other things, we could take this teaching in so many directions, but for the purposes of today, let's lift this idea out of it. There is something about a child's trust. There is something, and you know that if you picked up a toddler recently or a kid who's just learning to walk, or there is something about a child's trust that is amazing. And he says, you as adults should have it if you really want to know your Heavenly Father. But it's amazing in children. So there's something about a child's trust, but there's also something about a parent's anxiety. There's something about angry dad on vacation. There's something about frustrated mom day after day after day, distracted mom, anxious mom, fighting parents. There's something about a child's trust. And there's something about a parent's anxiety. And we have to be so careful with what we do with our anxiety. I have to be so careful about what I do with my anxiety. You as a parent need to be so careful about what you do with your worry and your anxiety and your fear. And Peter, who was there with Jesus that day, he was in the crowd. He heard this, reflects on this years later. Jesus said, I'm going to found the church on you. And he started the church. And so Peter was a leader in the church. And he's writing to Christians decades after this happens. And he reflects. And we pick up in 1 Peter chapter 5, verses 6 through 7. And he says, remembering Jesus' teachings, humble yourselves, therefore, under God's mighty hand, that he may lift you up in due time. So Peter remembered humility is the key to greatness. And so make yourself less. When I'm all stressed out and I can't take advice as a dad, and you know, the GPS doesn't know anything, that's not humility. That's arrogance on my part. That's stress. And I'm transferring that to my kids, to my wife, to my family. So he says, start humbling yourself. And then he talks about anxiety. The Bible actually addresses anxiety. And look at what Peter advised Christians to do. He said, cast all your anxiety on your children. That's actually not in the Bible. Okay, I made that up. That's not true. He didn't say that. That's what you do. That's what I do. We're just like, oh, I'm so stressed. Are you going to be okay? And what do? We project it onto our kids. And what lives in us now lives in them. This is what Peter actually wrote. Not this. He said, cast all your anxiety on him, on God. On God, right? What should be at the end of your rope? God. It's not. It's worry about money. It's worry about myself. Worry about my family. Worry about this. Worry about that. Cast all your anxiety on him because, look at this, he cares for you. He cares for you. And okay, well, how much anxiety should I put on my kids? Cast all your anxiety on him. And so I want to leave you with this thought today. Because Jesus elevates the trust of a child and says, it's so important. Don't let the stress of a parent ruin the trust of a child. Don't let your stress ruin the trust of a child. And sometimes we're so stressed and we're so freaked out, we're so worried and we're so anxious that it's our stress that transfers to the next generation. Now, to help us think through that in a very practical, but also through a clinical lens, I want to invite a guy who's been a friend for many years, friend of our church, friend of mine, attends our Aurelia location. He's a medical doctor and a pediatrician. Would you please help me welcome Dr. Rob Meter?
Hi, Rob.
Good to see you.
Good to see you, too.
Thanks so much for joining us today.
No problem,
anytime. Rob, you practiced for how many years have you practiced medicine?
Well, I've been in Aurelia now for almost 15 years.
Yeah.
And as a general pediatrician, but in the last couple of years, my focus has shifted primarily to behavioral and mental health in children. So, and then I run a small practice at home as well.
Right, because you're married, your wife's a doctor as well, and you have four children.
Four kids, yeah.
Yeah, and what are their age ranges?
7 to 12.
Yeah, that's great. So yeah. You are a practitioner as well as a teacher,
yeah,
right?
And when you're introduced and say, you know, we're focusing on the medical clinical side, actually a lot of it is just practical home-based side.
That's what surprised me, because this originally started, I wanted to test some of my theories out with you, you know, as a somebody who deals with this in your practice literally every single day. Mm-hmm. And so much of it is common sense. Mm-hmm. And so I want to start with this question. Is anxiety increasing? Like a lot of us would say, and you see cover stories and that sort of thing, suggesting that anxiety is increasing in kids and teens. What's your perspective on that as a doctor?
Yeah, like my perspective is that I think the perception out there might be that it is actually increasing. That is more common now than it used to be in the past. I think we're more aware of it now. Mm-hmm. I think in many ways, mental health has been destigmatized in our society. I mean, there's still a long ways to go, but I think we just recognize it more and perhaps are more accurate at diagnosing it when it exists. But I think it's always been there. I think that focus of our anxiety or of a child's stress has perhaps shifted to something different. I mean, obviously there's some cultural and generational things that are different now, you know, family structure is perhaps different in many situations, or social media, something that's kind of come on the scene in the last, and technology in the last, you know, decades or so. But, you know, 100 years ago, teenagers were stressed about going to fight in World War I, you know,
yeah,
and then
it's
nowadays
true.
it's something different. So
one of the things we've been encouraging adults to do is, you know, if you think this is more than just everyday, ordinary anxiety, stress, worry, fear, to go see a counselor or go see a doctor. Where do you find that line in kids? Like, there's a lot of parents who are like, I think my daughter or son struggles with anxiety. When is the time to call the doctor or to go get it checked out, in your view?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's useful just to go back to the, like, what anxiety actually is.
Okay.
And, you know, the underlying emotion is what you've talked about before. It's fear, you know, and that is that fight or flight response. Mm. When you're feeling anxious, that's what arises in you, is this feeling of fear. And, you know, anxiety normally is good. I mean, and stress, you need a bit of anxiety and stress to kind of, you know, get your homework done and and go to school and do a project and not procrastinate. You know, that it's a good motivator, and it's it's healthy, and most of the time it is. And it's part of many kids' personality. Some kids are more sort of type A, we call it, or they're more of a perfectionist, and some kids are a bit more careful and like to check things out before they jump in with both feet, and that's fine. I mean, that's just personality. Mm. But where it becomes a problem, of course, is where it starts to affect day-to-day function, right?
Yeah.
And so when you look at fear, what I say anxiety is really fear that's either exaggerated or misplaced. So in other words, when it becomes much bigger than it should be, or it becomes around something that doesn't even shouldn't even be there in the first place, like the monster under your bed, for example, right? So that's really when it starts to cross over, when a child's not doing what he or she should be doing at that age, you know, missing school, not going to a birthday party, or already kind of starting to socially withdraw and isolate themselves. That's when anxiety becomes just not a personality, but it actually crosses over into being a disorder. And that's, I think, when it's appropriate to maybe get help or to look into it a bit more.
Right. So for the average parent, when your child is missing school, skipping birthday parties, it's interfering with everyday life, that's the time to go say, we probably should see a doctor.
Yeah, it's for any psychological or psychiatric disorder, is it when it starts to affect your day-to-day function.
So in what ways do you think anxiety in parents can impact children?
Well, you mentioned it earlier in your message, you know, like the way we respond and the way we cope with stress transfers to children. You know, kids are very much affected by how we manage stress. It even starts before they're born. I mean, there's good studies that show that, you know, infants, before they're born, if there's a lot of stress towards the mom, or there's lots of anxiety in moms, or they're exposed to very stressful situations, that increases the stress hormones and the cortisol levels, which actually negatively impact the developing infant's brain. To the point,
literally physiologically affects the
child. Yeah, and we know that can cause, you know, in very severe instances, symptoms more like PTSD, even in small toddlers and babies. And that's an extreme example, of course, but it's, you know, it's very, you can generalize it, say like, well, you know, anxiety and stress in parents can often transfer to the kids. And so that's one way where, you know, it's worthwhile to, and I know there's stressful situations that are very real, unavoidable, but always look to say, you know, how do I cope with that? And how do I cope with my stress? Like, I suspect, you know, in that European parking lot, your coping mechanism wasn't that great.
Wasn't that great.
No.
No.
So, you know, and
that's
why
I'm seeing my doctor right now.
And if you're always responding in that way to stress, you know, you'd have to examine yourself, like, well, what's my response and how do I respond to stress? Because kids look up to you. You're their role model.
Yeah.
And they do what you do. And if you have an unhealthy way of responding to stress, they're going to adopt that as well.
And I should just say, for the adults here, just a reminder that we have a list of Christian counselors at our locations today, and we would love for you, if you're like, okay, I need help coping with this, Christian counseling can help with that. Go see your doctor. They can help with that.
Yeah,
so
probably one of the worst coping mechanisms that's out there is to avoid. And so I want to just, you know, one of the things we say to parents all the time is avoid the avoidance. It's very common in kids to want to just avoid the situation. And I know that's kind of the easiest way out, is just to say like, well, it's just, you know, not do that or not go there. And if you think about school avoidance, for example, that's where that kind of bears out practically. Like, you know, for you, it's camping, I think. I've heard enough messages to know that you avoid camping.
It's not Christian.
And if that was part of your everyday life, I'd want you to maybe, you know, check that out.
Yeah.
But for kids that go to school, it's you know, it's often school avoidance. It can be very detrimental to kids to avoid school. And the longer you avoid, the bigger the mountain becomes.
So an example would be your son or daughter says, I don't want to go to school today, or I feel sick. And maybe, but, you know, they don't have a cold, they don't have the flu.
Yeah,
they
you want to rule out appendicitis.
Yeah, you want to rule out appendicitis.
Yeah.
But there's no medical thing other than I'm just afraid to go.
Right.
What do you do in a case like that? Because a lot of parents would just be like, okay, maybe they need a break.
Yeah, right. And you know, so, but explore maybe why that is, right? Look for the underlying reason. Maybe there's bullying going on at school. Maybe there's a problem with friends. Maybe something happened on social media that, you know, that they're afraid to you know, look into. Or, you know, maybe it's a problem with a teacher or whatever, right? There could be lots of great reasons, or a learning problem, a learning disability that has to be diagnosed or looked into further, that could maybe make a child anxious about going to school. And, you know, to avoid it is not dealing with the underlying problem. And so, again, that just makes that mountain so much bigger. And I see kids in my practice, and they've missed, you know, a few days of school, and, yeah, we can address that. But once it's weeks and weeks sometimes in months, you know, then it takes a long time to undo that and to readdress that.
Right.
Because it gets harder and harder to jump back in when you've been away for a very long time.
Right. So if you're skipping work, you're skipping school, you're skipping birthday parties, eventually that becomes this, like the monster under the bed, this giant thing.
Yep. It becomes much bigger than it should be, right?
Hmm. Okay. So don't avoid. Technology.
Right.
We're going to spend a whole week on technology next week and talk about that role in anxiety. But let's process it for a few minutes through the family lens.
Yeah, the pediatric lens, sure.
Yeah. Do you think that technology can be a source of stress for kids, like everything from video games to phones to social media? How does that work out in a family context?
I mean, you know, I see some of the kids, you know, they're addicted to their devices, for example. I mean,
Right. They're
sitting in my office and they're actually playing a game while I'm trying to talk to them. I actually have to lean over and push pause for them, you know. Or the parents on their phone while they're having a visit with me in the office, and I just have to tell them to put their phones away, you know. Like, it can be so addictive, and that's probably a new thing in our culture nowadays, is technology. You know, in terms of how it can cause stress, well, obviously, you know, the stress can be around, like, they're on that too much and they're really avoiding face-to-face interaction and normal social interaction. That can be detrimental to a child. They need to learn how to interact socially, and we know that. That's sort of intuitive. And so you need to set limits around that, and that's healthy. But, you know, one aspect I see it a lot is when technology is used and it affects sleep. I mean, you need good sleep. A child needs good sleep in order to function day to day. If you're, you know, if your teenager is staying up till 1-2 o'clock in the morning on Snapchat or Facebook or whatever, that's a problem. And of course, they're going to have trouble getting up at 7 or 8 o'clock in the morning to go to school. And so that needs to be addressed. And there's always great things about technology. And like you've said before, it's not the technology; it's how it's used. And so, you know, there's some really great tools actually, and some really great, you know, support groups that are online that are actually very beneficial. But that's not usually what the teenagers are into, or the younger kids, and it's very tempting to overly use screens. And, you know, having a screen to fall asleep used to be just sort of a TV in the bedroom. Now it's a tablet that's right by your face. It's bright lights, kind of affects your melatonin levels. And
Right. So
I usually say no electronics an hour before bedtime.
Mm-hmm. That would be the prescription. It's interesting, you know, I read an article a couple years ago, and I noticed, like most people, I was charging my devices mm-hmm. on the nightstand next to my bed. And a couple years ago, I just stopped that. I said, you know what, Facebook isn't going to be the last thing I check at night. Started charging my devices in my office in the basement, and I sleep better. Like, there's no technology. We've never had a TV in our bedroom or in our kitchen, and you focus better, you sleep better, mm-hmm. and you have that rule at your house.
Yeah, I mean, we always say the devices, you know, they're charged in the kitchen, and that's for that exact reason, right? So that, you know, you don't wake up and the first thing you go to is your phone, and then the last thing you do before you go to bed is look at your phone, right?
What do you say to the parent of a 13-year-old who says, my son is so addicted to video games, it's like every waking moment is, you know, on video games. What do I do? Is it cold turkey?
Cold turkey. You know, just kidding. That's not going to go over very well. You know, you don't want to be draconian about it. And I think, by definition, a behavior is something that develops over a long time.
Right.
And when you're trying to change behavior, it's going to take you some time to undevelop some of those behaviors, right? So just maybe setting some healthy boundaries in place. And, you know, as hard as it is to do, it's hard sometimes to set boundaries.
Right.
But kids need boundaries. They
need
to know where
the
limits are. And screen time is one of those things where you say, these are the limits. And if you have to, you know, modify your Wi-Fi or whatever to be on a schedule, or have just some basic rules about, you know, no screens before bedtime, et cetera, then so be it.
Yeah.
But parents need to model that behavior too, yep. right? I mean, if you're on your phone all the time, well, then why can't your kids, right?
So. Mm-hmm. Now, there, you know, we could talk for a long, long time, but there's some resources that are very helpful for parents after that, and there's a lot out there, but you highlighted a couple in particular that we want to share with parents.
I mean, there's lots of great books out there. There's lots of great resources out there for parents, you know, and I have a list of ones that I recommend when I see families in my office about this. There's one, a very practical, very reasonable book that it's called Keys to Parenting Your Anxious Child. That's, you know, written by one of the physicians at SickKids that I just give parents a reference to. So that's a good example. You know, there's also another great workbook that that's called What to Do When You Worry Too Much. It's essentially cognitive behavioral therapy for kids that you can work through with your child. And there's also some great online resources as well.
Right.
Like there's one called quietkit.com, which is one that one of my daughters just told me about a few weeks ago. And it really is, well, I did it with her like for 2 minutes the other day and I almost fell asleep. So it's like, it works. And, you know, and then the boys in your office will say like, oh, that's too sissy, I'm not going to do that. And then you tell them that the Navy SEALs actually use that to help
them. The Navy SEALs?
Yeah,
that's really how
they developed it. They use that same app. Well, suddenly it's cool.
There you go.
Yeah.
Quietkit.com.
Yeah,
okay.
That's just an example. There's probably many more out there that teach you, you know, things like box breathing and just like relaxation and whatever. So
one more question, although there's probably many. What can parents do concretely to reduce anxiety in their home, in themselves, and their kids? What are some things parents can do?
Well, we talked about already just, you know, being introspective and seeing, well, what are my coping mechanisms and how do I address that? I mean, that exactly. You know, but there's other things that you can do as well. I mean, I think one temptation sometimes is to overschedule the family and overschedule the kids. And I know sometimes we feel guilty as parents saying like, well, we didn't do anything today. And actually, that's okay. It's okay to let kids get bored. Let them explore a little bit around the edges of kind of, you know, the property. And there was this great study that was done like 30 years ago in Vermont, I think it was, where this guy basically tracked the whereabouts of all these kids in town, almost like with GPS, although they didn't have GPS in those days. They must have had some other mechanism, but they just tracked them all around town. And really, the kids would stray kind of down the street and they would go to their corner store and maybe to their friends' houses. But essentially, they kind of had the run of the town, and that was sort of the limits of their experience. And then what they did is they took those kids, and then many of those kids became parents themselves in that same town, and they tracked the whereabouts of their children.
Right.
And
so
really, what had happened was, you know, it had shrunk down to really the size of the property or within earshot and eyesight of the parents.
Kids don't really leave the house anymore.
It had just shrunk down tremendously, and they asked the parents, well, why is that? Well, because of fear of, you know, car accidents and kidnapping or, you know, whatever. And then they actually look back at the crime rates and the actually, you know, rate of some of these events happening, and actually have decreased over those 30 years. So in many ways, the community was safer, but yet, you know, the children were more confined. And that's fueled a lot by media. You know, things that happen 1,000 kilometers away now, we tend to personalize those and think that that's going to happen with us now, too. So a lot of ways, you know, what happens around us in our world affects us probably more so than it should.
So, and again, that goes back to your definition of anxiety as being exaggerated or misplaced fear.
Yeah, and I'm not telling you to be reckless or naive. You know,
right. Put
a bike helmet on your child, and you know, if you're living on a busy highway, yeah, you're not going to let them walk out on a highway.
Right.
But you know, just be reasonable, examine, and maybe just push beyond your own little anxiety a little bit and say, like, it's probably okay for my kids to maybe explore a bit beyond where we're.
And you mentioned overscheduling. Yeah. So a lot of parents, it's like every night of the week there's an activity. Can that sometimes produce anxiety in kids if you overschedule them?
Well, yeah. Like, activity is great. I mean, physical activity,
yeah.
I mean, it's one of the best medicines I can prescribe to any child is get some physical activity. It's powerful, and those endorphins are great. But there's always ways that it can be overdone as well. And if we overschedule our kids, it actually takes away from family time, too, and the opportunity to do that. So, you know, in general, you know, with our kids, it's sort of one activity per week and then maybe, you know, one sport. Like, they do piano lessons kind of one night a week, and then they do one sport depending on what the season is. And, you know, a variety of things as well. Like, you don't want to, you know, hone in on one activity at too early of an age. When the kids are under 13, you know, you really want to maybe have them dabble in a number of different things. And to not have that every night, that's actually just fine. You'd be surprised what kids come up with when they're bored. You know, it's, you know, just to have some freedom to be resourceful and to kind of think of some activities themselves. I know this sounds like so basic.
It is. The screens are off and there's no activity, so get bored and wander around.
And that's probably, that's about it, basically.
That's a good prescription, right? It beats medication.
Sometimes
you need medicine, but...
And there's a role for everything, but and there's an extreme, right? And I'm not trying to blame parents for wanting their child to be engaged, and absolutely there's a great social aspect to sports and activities, but there's also, if you could be intentional about having dinner at home as a family, that opens up channels of communication. That's so healthy for kids to really see that their parents are intentional about wanting to communicate with their kids, and that just transfers when they start at 3, 4, 5 years of age. They only sit at the table for about 5 minutes at that age, but still, it's a habit, right?
But and long dinners. Produces. I mean, we just had a 3-hour dinner with our kids in Toronto as adults, which was like completely enjoyable. And you want to cultivate that unstructured, unhurried time together as a family. Rob, this has been incredible.
Yeah,
thank
great.
You so much. Hopefully. We really appreciate
okay.
it.
Okay,
thanks,
welcome.
Rob.
No problem.
It's amazing how much of that is just like kind of common sense, but we forget, don't we? It's like, don't overschedule, just relax, have a meal together, and how you model this is just so critical. I want to leave you with two thoughts before we wrap up today. Number one, cast all your anxiety on Him, and that's God. That's not your spouse. It's not your kids. I mean, you can talk about it with your spouse or with a friend, and certainly we want to encourage you to talk to a counselor or your small group or talk to a doctor. I mean, if it's interfering with everyday life, you may need medical help. But cast all your anxiety on Him. It's, at the end of your rope, there should be God, and we'll show you how to do that at the very end of this series. Why? Because He actually cares for you. He cares for you. And then as a reminder to us all, including me, don't let the stress of a parent ruin the trust of a child. Your child is in that amazing state where they're still trusting, they're still dependent. And if we can nurture that, the world is going to come along, but if we can nurture that and we can give them this wonder of God and this unhurried pace in life, and I mean, if we can deal with our stress, then we can help our kids. So hope that helped you today. We're going to pray, and then we'll tell you what's coming next week. Let's pray together. Lord God, I just want to thank you so much for the gift of parenting and the gift of family. And it gets confusing and it's hard and we all blow it and I blow it and we make mistakes. And you're a God who redeems and you're a God who loves. And I just want to pray for every parent, God, that you would help us to take our stress, our anxiety, our worry to you. And that we'd be able to see that reduced. And that we can just help our kids. We just pray for this next generation. I thank you for every child down the hall, Wombaland, Upstreet, Transit, Tonight and Inside Out, for every kid, Lord. And I just pray that you would help us as parents to realize that you redeem the time. If some of us are feeling, I want a decade back or 2 decades back, just let us know. We're still parents. We're still influential. We can still change the conversation, still change the tone. And I just pray that you would help us to trust you, to cast all of our care, all of our anxiety on you because you care for us. And so I just pray that you would help families this week, all of our families. And we pray this in Jesus' name. Amen.